Blog Talk Radio.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and GC Rock Show. This is a show where we try to think for ourselves and offer thought-provoking, stimulating, informative, and entertaining discussion. Welcome.
Well, yes, indeed. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Dave, and I'll be running the, I'll be flying the spacecraft tonight. G-Ski's been busy with moving, and not really sure. No, never mind. We got a great, great show. We want to welcome everybody. We got a great, great show. I got Susie listening on the line. Hi, yes, Susie. I didn't really get a chance to even check to see if you tweeted anything, so I didn't retweet anything. So I know, even if I don't even know if he gave you the link. I hope he did. But anyways, we you know that we really appreciate everything that you do and that we love you, and we hope you're doing really, really well. Maybe maybe later tonight you can give us a call in and we can chat. Because I got to be honest, we've all been so busy that it really hasn't been difficult to put together a show. So let me get this stuff out of the way. If you want to give us a call, you can call 516-387-1705. Like I said, if you want to give us a call, and we'll I would appreciate it if you want to chat, you want to debate, you want to talk about me, you want to talk to me, you want to call me, whatever. We'll see how long you last. So we'll see. 516-387-1705. Bigfoot just came in the chat. Bigfoot, it's just me tonight, buddy. I am rocking two different accounts on two different browsers. So that's how you're able to see both of us on there. I need to be logged in as G-Ski to run the studio, but then I open another browser and log in as myself so I can chat as myself if necessary. Because I would never deign to speak for the great G-Ski Rocks. To speak for himself. And, you know, who knows, maybe he'll give us a call a little bit later. So if you want to get in touch with him, you can reach him at email address, gskirocks, that's G, the letter G, SKIROCKS, at airwavesamerica.com. So he can, he's got an email account set up there. And apparently I do too, but as I've said before, I've yet to ever really access it. You can email me, Dave@airwavesamerica.com. Might be easier to tweet, or it might be easier to Facebook, or it might be easier to just open a door and yell. You know, I might hear it. But anyways, yeah, we got a great, great show. Like I said, G-Ski has been jammed with his moving project, and I don't even know if he has internet set up at his house. Sent me a text this afternoon. Hate to do this to you, bud, but you know, so be it. And I'm like, I'll see what I can do. I'll see how far I can go. Maybe we'll end early. No, I'm sure I can figure something out to chat about. There's a lot going on. I'll tell you what, boy, oh boy, the Fauci emails. thank goodness for FOIA. You know what we need? We need to have FOIA for Congress. They will never pass that, but. Imagine the stuff that you'd be able to find if we could FOIA Congress. Like I said, they're never going to pass that. Just like they exempt themselves from Obamacare. You know, It's rules for thee, but not for me. So I was thinking tonight. I didn't really get a chance to prepare a whole lot. I was thinking to just kind of like, you know, toss it back and forth with G-Ski until this afternoon. So I thought maybe what we could do is kind of like just kind of revisit some of the topics that we've covered on the show since we started. You know, we can back up and revisit those. But before I do any more of that, I'm going to open with the Bacon Zone. Enjoy.
Good evening.
Well, I used to eat bacon, 'cause I like the way it tastes. Now I eat it for jihadis, just to say in your face.
I eat
bacon, wrapped in bacon, rolled in bacon bits. I don't care if they like it or not. It offends them, it's in their Quran.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
You ain't gonna take my bacon.
I'm glad
you're offended to your shoes. 'Cause I'd rather eat my bacon and have
see what I'm trying to say, Abdul. I'd
rather you got over yourself, put an end to all this righteous indignation. Have some bacon and enjoy it. We can all get along and from war enjoy permanent vacation.
Offending you.
I'd rather eat bacon wrapped
Who's there? Me. I kill you.
So welcome back. We we had a little run-in with a guy a couple shows ago about Purple Pill. He took big offense to that particular song. And I say, cool. You know, let it be. Let it rip. All right, so we got a folks, we got a great show for you. I remember when we started, Jeezky and I was talking about how the media. I got here like a couple of shows later, but I had some things I really didn't know what to call it at the time. The gaslighting, and I hear things that I hear being said on the by people in the news, lefties or Congress people, whatever. It's about, and I told you there was three ways about this. Is number one, they will accuse someone else of exactly what it is they're doing to cover up the fact that they're doing it, because if you accuse them, then it's like, I know you are, but what am I? And no one really believes, no one puts any credibility in that. It's who are you going to believe, me or those people that I just called a liar? They said I was lying. Well, who are you going to believe, me or those people that I've already called a liar? Whoever gets the accusation out first, it seems, has the credibility. Because as soon as you accuse somebody of being a liar, well, could be that they're lying, whether or not you were lying about them being a liar or not. So that's one form. The other form is when they keep accusing somebody. Well, there was three ways. So you got I'm accusing you of what I'm actually doing just to deflect. The other one is if I can't generate enough buzz or PR to get any traction with discrediting somebody, then you just make something up and just get everybody to start repeating it. So one of the things that I started was one of our first shows. It was in with regards to what people think or what people believe about President Trump. It's either made up or created, or it's exaggerated and embellished, or it's irrelevant and inconsequential. So if you find like the Russian collusion thing, after all said and done, it was made up. It was based on the Steele dossier that has been proven to be discredited. They went and got, four warrants, and knowing that it was just a made-up thing, but they were able to sell it to somebody. Now, when you're selling to somebody who really wants to buy, that's a pretty easy sale, when you talk about sales. If you're trying to convince somebody that this will do it, somebody's going to buy it. And apparently there was some, there was the Pfizer judges that bought it, and mostly because they really wanted to buy it. And they're the insiders and all that. Then you go the first impeachment was the quid pro quo. It ended up being, and you have it, a clear video that none of the media really played. They could have if they wanted to. Was the Joe Biden at that little conference kind of bragging about doing the quid pro quo because he wanted that prosecutor fired because that was the guy that was investigating the company that his son worked for, and he had to protect that. So he bribed them with $1 billion, $1 billion of our dollars to you know, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If he's not fired, you're not going to get the $1 billion. So they fired him. So that took care of any investigations into Burisma, which is what Hunter was on the board of, something magically on the board of. He didn't have any experience in the energy industry. He didn't have any experience in the gas and, industry. And even in an interview, he stupidly said, when asked, is there any do you think if your last name wasn't Biden that you would have gotten the job? And he's like, well, probably not. Can you hear yourself? Okay, so they got that going on. That was the first one. They had to make it up. It turned out to be Joe was the quid pro quo guy. So that got buried. Now, all of the investigation and interviews for the quid pro quo phone call, and I say that with air quotes, they were done in the secret room. What's that called? They call it the skiff, where they can fog out the windows. I saw that whole thing on it was a Brad Pitt and Robert Redford spy movie. Spy something about a spy. I can't remember the name of that movie. It was a good movie. But they were debriefing Robert Redford, who was at the same time trying to get Brad Pitt, who was his agent, out of China, I think. And they were doing it in the skiff. So that's where I know where that movie is from. If I think of it, I'll mention it. It was something about spy in the title of the movie with Brad Pitt. Spy. The only thing that's coming into my head is the Mad Magazine Spy versus Spy, or Spy Gate, Spy. I spy. Anyway, never mind. So that's where the skiff is, you know, where the windows will fog out and it's soundproof, and whatever goes on in there was tightly controlled. Schiff was the guy in charge of doing that. So when they were doing interviews in there, when they were doing their interviews, they weren't releasing or even leaking any of the information. Why? Well, because it didn't support their narrative. They would only leak any tidbit, whether in context or out, that even slightly supported the narrative that Donald Trump had asked for a quid pro quo with Ukraine. And you know, the phone call was since released. No one knew what was actually said on the phone call. It was a whistleblower that heard somebody say something about it. Was like a second hand whistleblower, or even third hand, maybe a third hand whistleblower that thought they could make some hay with something that they said. And they went all in. Everybody was like, woo. They went right all in. So, and then when they ended up releasing the phone call, everybody was looking and saying, what? That's nothing. So anyways, the impeachment didn't. I mean, he got impeached, yes, which is a thing. But he did not get removed by the Senate because, you know, there were enough senators that said, all right, that's the whole thing is BS. You know, we can see the reports. We know how these guys work. We're in the game. We know how the game works. And you got nothing. So we're not going to remove him from office. Nice try. So then they moved on. So then they moved on to the the next one. What was the next one? Was that the insurrection one, where they wanted to impeach him for inciting an insurrection, where nobody was armed. nobody had any real weapons. the people that were doing the damage, you know as well as I do, those were not genuine Trump supporters. They were genuine. What they were is genuine agitators. When you show up with a backpack with ropes and hammers, you're not there to rally. You're there to disrupt. You're there to infiltrate and try to make it look like everybody that attended that rally, you know. And I still say there had to be a million people down there. There had to be a million people. Who else can generate that?
Joe Biden. He got 80 million votes.
Yeah, right. So that category of things that people believe about Trump, those are made up things. A second or slash third hand whistleblower, I put it in air quotes, whistleblower, talk about something that he heard somebody say that Trump said. What? That doesn't make a bit of sense. So that doesn't work. So, and then it was the insurrection. And when you look at the timeline on the insurrection, there was people hammering at windows and trying to rush in before he was even done his speech that day. Not to mention that not all the videos, but there was some videos, plenty of videos. Everybody has a phone, so they're all taking video of everything. The Capitol Police waving people into the Capitol. I wonder who gave the order for them to do that. Has anybody even asked that question? Who gave the order for Capitol Police to step aside and wave people through into the building? Because when they're doing it in two or three different locations, that's not a local decision. That's not one guy saying, yeah, these guys, you know, they'll be all right. They can go ahead on in. They want to go in there. It's the people's house. They can go in if they want. That's not one guy saying that. That's somebody directing for, and it seems like also, for a specific length of time. Between here and here, we're going to let people into the Capitol, and then we're going to have to crack down on them because they're in there. Well, it doesn't make any sense. Who gave that order? And nobody has asked. Nobody. So, you know, I don't know where to go with that. That's one of the reasons that, you know, he didn't get him removed on the second impeachment. One of the other things too is that's basically totally made up. Is that Donald Trump is a racist or a white supremacist. And that's based on the Charlottesville speech, if I recall. And all you ever hear, from the media whenever they would refer to it, they would say, they would play the part where he's saying, well, there was good people on both sides. Okay. So allow me, please indulge me for, I can probably do this in under a minute. All right. So let's get your phone and let's locate the Charlottesville speech, the audio of the Charlottesville speech. Let's say that takes 15 seconds. Now you need to skip to the part of the speech where he said there was good people on both sides. Shall we give another 15 seconds for that? If you know where to look. And then all you have to do is listen for an additional 30 seconds to the part where he specifically says, I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis or the white supremacists. It might depend on whether you use Google or DuckDuckGo. Well, that's true. That's true, Bigfoot. But in any case, you know, what he says within about 30 seconds of saying, well, there was good people there, you know, on both sides, he said there were people there that were trying to take down statues, and there were people there that were trying to stop them from taking down statues. So, you know, he was acknowledging that each side, based on what they believe in, is they meant well. Let's put it that way. They meant well. But then he went back to say, I'm not talking about the white supremacists or the neo-Nazis. They should be condemned 100% all the time, every time. And no one ever plays that clip. So that's why people think he's a racist or a white supremacist. So in any case, that's all in the based on what people believe about Trump. So it's either made up or totally created out of whole cloth. Another category is where they exaggerate things or they embellish things. When they talk about a non-disclosure agreement as hush money. Oh, he paid hush money. No, his lawyers drew up a non-disclosure agreement, and you pay this much money, and the person agrees to never speak about whatever it was. And if it's not enough money, the person will say, okay, I'm not going to sign this unless the amount is X. I'm not going to sign it unless it's X. You know, so that's how a non-disclosure agreement would work, where if the you can't dictate how much a person will settle for, you know, and then you have to weigh, is it worth this much money to have them not say anything? Well, what was it? That was the Stormy Daniels thing. Well, she's the one and ended up that took the money, A, and ended up breaking the non-disclosure agreement. So, you know, she was the one that was on the news for every night for about 2 or 3 weeks. There was another one too that just came to me. That was I got a friend who hates Trump, and he said, well, you know, I'm really not crazy about the guy that's in there. Okay, so his son is his grown son is more of a libertarian. So he has got his dad, you know, my buddy. Kind of leaning, you know, more libertarian. But that does not exempt him from believing the mainstream news about Trump, which was 100% negative. I mean, even the law of averages defies that. So the example that he comes up, because he goes, I said, look, you know, you can't believe what they, you know, what they say about him. No. I listen to the things that he says. Okay. All right. Through the filter of what they decide to play, you know. Well, and one of the things when there was a protest down at the White House, and supposedly they used tear gas to clear the courtyard, and he walked across to the church and he held up a Bible, and his problem with that was that the Bible was upside down when he held it up. Okay. Okay. That was his problem. Yeah, but the Bible was upside down. Okay. So, in other words, who cares? You know, they were saying, well, he was just there for a photo op. That's irrelevant. You know, but it was something that was embellished and noticed and talked about in the media. You know, there was a ton of things. I can't even think of all the things that was exaggerated that really didn't mean anything. He was in a situation where it didn't matter what he said, it didn't matter what he didn't say. Whichever way he went, it was going to be criticized and portrayed as a negative thing. It didn't matter. Whatever he did, whatever he didn't do, whatever he said, whatever he didn't say, it was all negatively reported. He just cured cancer. Can you believe that? What a bonehead. Who would actually want to cure cancer? He's an imbecile. As an example. I did not actually hear that. I'm saying that I'm using absurdity to illustrate the absurd. So then the other category is things that are irrelevant or just inconsequential. And you know, one of them was the upside down Bible. But now, you know, I had somebody saying, I think it was a guy I work with. He was saying, back in 92, he was saying he would run as a Republican because they were less educated and thus they would be easier to fool into buying into his plans, because Republicans are less educated. Ooh, where to start on that one? Where to start? No, in 1992, a lot has happened since then. A lot has happened since then. So look how far back you have to go to get that one. You know, he built a golf course in Scotland also. A ton of things. Whatever. His tax returns. He's not giving those up willingly, and I don't blame him, because it's a situation where whatever he did or didn't do or said or didn't say or claimed or didn't claim or wrote off or didn't write off, it's going to be the end of the world. Oh, my God, can you believe that he only gave $400,000 to this particular charity? Whatever it is. So that's how it is. So those are the three categories. That was what we talked about on our first show, and we kind of morphed into gaslighting, which as soon as I come back, I'm going to kind of brush over that, and we will we'll talk a little bit about that. All right, I'll be right back.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the US Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt US Kids, and the Ad Council.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
We can create a million new manufacturing jobs in the next 4 years. If you believe in a country where everyone gets a fair shot and everyone does their fair share and everyone plays by the same rules, yes, our road is longer, but we travel it together.
Imagine the breakthroughs that are on the horizon. And just beyond.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
America, I never said this journey would be easy, and I won't promise that now.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Yes, our path is harder, but it leads to a better place.
Mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Not yet.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
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 It's literally around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which hunger is vanquished by crops that don't depend on the soil, water, or fertilizer, or pesticides to thrive.
Are we there yet?
They're just around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which nations no longer depend on nuclear weapons for their defense.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back. This is Dave sitting in for G-Ski. G-Ski's out right now, and he's caught up in that moving project. He moved to a new house. He said something about also he doesn't. I don't think his internet is totally set up yet. Maybe later on I'll text him and say, hey, I know your internet isn't up yet, but your phone should work. I'll make him call it. I'll shame him into calling in. That'll be good. And I don't even have to worry about talking crap about him because he never listens to the shows when he's not on it. He downloads them, that's for sure, but then he never listens to them. So I can say whatever I want. I can say that he's the coolest guy in the world, or I can say that I really don't think that, which I do. He is the coolest guy in the world. So getting back, that morphs us into and kind of overlaps with the topic of gaslighting. So government mind control, this is how I approached it a couple of shows ago. Government mind control isn't real, but gaslighting by the media is enough to drive someone crazy. And we have many, many examples of that. I got some doggies that are excited. They'll be fine in 1 second. So here's some definitions. In Psychology Today that I found, gaslighting is a technique that undermines your entire perception of reality. When someone is gaslighting you, you often second-guess yourself, your memories, and your perceptions. After communicating with the person gaslighting you, you are left feeling dazed and wondering what is wrong with you. So that's a good definition. No, it's a verb. The dictionary definition: to manipulate someone by psychological means into questioning their own sanity. What's this one? Oh, Medical News Today. They had another one. The term gaslighting derives from the 1938 play and the 1944 film Gaslight, in which a husband manipulates his wife into thinking she has a mental illness by dimming their gas-fueled lights and telling her she's hallucinating. And so that's where the term comes from. That's what it's all about. Gaslighting, an elaborate and insidious technique of deception and psychological manipulation, usually practiced by a single deceiver or quote-unquote gaslighter on a single victim over an extended period of time. Its effect is to gradually undermine the victim's confidence in their own ability to distinguish truth from falsehood, right from wrong, or reality from appearance, thereby rendering him pathologically dependent on the gaslighter in his thinking or feeling. So that's what the media does. I mean, you can go to any story in the media and find examples of gaslighting. So that's what I call them henceforth, the gaslight media, because everything they say is a deflection or an accusation or just made up, and they repeat it. The next couple of shows we started talking about the Arizona forensic audit and whatever information I could grab from, you know, several sources, because nobody's talking about it. Nobody wants to even touch it with a 10-foot pole because of what it portends. I'll tell you that right now.
So it's still going on because they tried to get it shut down. They tried, people were suing. They hired like 30 heavyweight lawyers, you know, like Democrats and stuff. They hired a whole bunch of heavyweight lawyers. I mean, heavy hitters to go down there and try to get the thing shut down. And the state legislature said, no, we're gonna continue on with this. We're gonna do it. And they are. They had to pause. They had to pause for one particular weekend because they had the venue booked for graduations. So they had to lock up votes and stuff like that. Now, apparently, the Democrat Secretary of State, installed by the Secretary of State's project, funded by George Soros, sent observers down, and putting together little bits that I can recall. It's kind of like off the top of my head. They sent some observers down, and they came back and reported that there was one alarm or something that was set off. And again, I might be confusing this with stuff going on in Georgia because a lot of it is the same kind of stuff. But they thought that there was a where the ballots are locked up, that door was left open for a night or something. There was an alarm that went off and no one really knew anything, you know, one of those things. I can't remember if it was Georgia or Arizona, but one of the other things they saw was a file out in the open on the table that said confidential. So, I mean, that's a big no-no. I'm trying to think what else did they? They had a complaint about something else that was like small. They're still looking at ballots now. They're looking at the ballots that were counted, and you know there's a lot of them that they're finding that should not have been counted. And I'm pretty sure that they're going right by the original election laws and not the new laws that were done, like a month before the election with all the lawsuits that they put in those five states about mail-in ballots, about relaxing all of the safeguards with regards to signatures, with regards to absentee ballots and having a reason, or with regards to accepting ballots like 10 days after the election because, you know, apparently stuff gets lost in the mail. Not that much gets lost in the mail. Not that much. I mean, not enough to overturn the election. You know, I'll give that argument right back to them. Not enough. You hear stories, but you know what? Tell you what, in my office, we do our jobs. And we always try to do our jobs better. So if you didn't know, I'm a mail carrier. So, whenever I hear stuff like that, I'm like, hey, that's not the reality. Because I also accused him, they accused Trump of removing mailboxes so that people in Democrat areas, so that people would have to go further to put their mail-in ballot. Unbelievable. Had nothing to do with Trump. It was just a routine thing. Some district must have decided to move some boxes that weren't generating enough reason for them to stay where they were. So in any case. So that's some of the stuff that was going on with that Arizona audit. And now they're, like I said, they're still finding ballots that should not have been counted. They're going through all of that.
all kinds of stuff. And now, even with the machines, they have some issues with the machines. Okay. Now, this is where I kind of step to the side and I say, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I hope you can prove it. I hope somebody is accountable to that. But I just get the sense that nothing's going to happen with Dominion. Nothing. I just get the sense nothing's going to actually come of that. Sidney Powell has been on this, and she knows it inside and out and outside and in, and she's been all throughout it like a snake weaving through tree roots or something. She's been all through it, and she knows everything about what's going on with it. And she's been saying for the longest time that there are algorithms in these machines that don't actually count votes. They just decide that when they get this many votes, this percentage goes this way, this percentage goes that way. What the hell kind of election is that? Who would put that kind of a machine in to count that? Like I said, I hope she's right. I hope it's something that can be proved. Now, with regards to what would happen, I've heard two different things. The first one is, hey, Cassidy, can you bring these up and give them to the girls? So the first one is that the elector, the state, the Secretary of State can decertify that election. Meaning all those electors were disenfranchised because when we recount the votes in this, because of this forensic audit, when we recount things, it kind of turned out differently than what was in November. And they can decertify it, and then they will just go back and count who really did win and go with that. So then I heard a different version of how to do that, where somebody was saying, and they both make sense. That's why I'm kind of torn. Somebody was saying that, well, the election was certified. The election was certified by the right people, by the authorized people, and there is now a president inaugurated in, and if anything should happen from here, the only way to remove that person is through impeachment, in which case the 25th Amendment comes in with its line of succession. So there's definitely two separate schools of thought that seem both constitutional. I don't know which way to go yet. I know which way I want to go because the impeachment road would leave nothing to would not benefit Trump at all, would not rectify that situation. But the other one, where you decertify the election and recount everything that is authorized to be counted, that one would. I just don't. The whole thing is so unprecedented. You have no way of, nothing to look back and say, well, you know, back then they decided to do it this way, so that's probably the way we should do it. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. Not on this scale. You know, I mean, in Georgia, they're saying if they ended up decertifying the vote, That the same thing would I'm trying to think of the guy, the senator that just lost. He'd be the senator because he would have won without the runoff. It would not have gone to a runoff when they eliminate all the votes that weren't authorized to be counted. So. You know, that's that's the latest thing that I have for that is, number one, it can be decertified. Or let's do A, B. A, the possibility is it can be decertified, and then they will just count the ballots that were authorized to be counted, and the electors will be reassigned. Basically, the electors will be reassigned, in which case Joe Biden will not have had the 270 electors, which is the threshold to get to be president. Doesn't mean Trump will gain 270 necessarily, but he would take some away from enough away from Biden so that he didn't have the 270. But if it happened in, you know, enough states that it kind of came back out that, look, this election needs to be decertified and we need to count, you know, authorized ballots, which is, you know, which would be fine if that would A, put a whole bunch of people in jail for treason, you know, or whatever the charge is for that election fraud. That's a crime. All the crimes that have been covered up, even the people doing the cover up, should be punished, I think. And then, you know, those same people won't be around to keep throwing spitballs. They'll get new people in to throw spitballs. And you know, I'd let the chips fall where they may in a situation like that. But then B, the other situation is, the election was duly certified by the authorized people to certify them. There is a president that is inaugurated in office in the chair currently, and, you know, according to all the votes and all the lawsuits and all everything till now, it looks like a legitimate thing. So the only way to remove that president would be through impeachment. And that's where the line of succession comes in to play from the 25th Amendment, where it spells out who is second, third in line. So they can't allow him to be removed because that would put Kamala Harris into the big chair. And then if you take her out of it, that puts Nancy Pelosi into the big chair, you know. So if, you know, in other words, if everything is as it is currently, there's no recourse on the B side, because you have to go with the impeachment process and removal process, which brings in, you know, the second in command now becomes the first in command. And then, you know, if they're impeached also, then you get the third in command, which is the Speaker of the House. And, you know, you really don't gain anything. The A way, when you start counting only authorized ballots, well, you're going to get into the down ballot stuff that may flip a whole bunch of stuff, may flip the Senate, may flip the House. And, you know, what are you going to do then? You know, you're going to be, if the exposure creates, and the truth creates a result that I agree with, I'll take the hit. I'll let you call me a cheater. Because in the meantime, you had a whole bunch of people that went to jail. Now, the difference is if you have a Democrat administration putting Republicans in jail. In other words, Democrats are in control of everything, right? But then it's them who ends up getting plucked out and moved and put in jail. Well, who are you going to blame? You can't say, oh, it's a partisan thing, you know? So that's got to be the best way to get through this with, you know, just a modicum of credibility. Because as soon as power transfers, then it'd be a partisan thing to put all the people responsible in jail. You have to put them in jail while they're still in charge. The problem is they control everything. So who's going to do it? How are you going to do that? That's the big conundrum. When you're in power and you're putting your opponents in jail, as an example, that's, you know, like I said, that's an obvious partisan issue. But if the people who are in power end up in jail, you know, through I don't know who would do it. Through exposure, I'm trying to wrap my head around how that could possibly happen, because they control the administration, they control all the levers of power, and they would steer away, they would deflect, they would steer things away from everything that would harm them. So I don't know. I'm still kind of noodling through that in any case. So let's take a top of the hour, and we will join you on the other side. I've been threatening to go through some of the rules for radicals, and I think we can talk about whatever I understand about the Fauci thing. I mean, I listened to some Mark Levin today. I listened to some Dan Bongino. So, you know, I can at least discuss it. And if anybody wants to call in and you know, contribute something that I may have missed, perfectly fine. In the meantime, let's take a break. All right. See you in a few.
My daddy was a hero, and I'm so proud of him. I love him, and I miss him very much.
I made you, Dad. I love you, Daddy.
Very sad and hurtful that my sisters won't have as much as memory like I do with my dad.
When I told the girls that their daddy became an angel, it was extremely hard, because their daddy was no longer there to tuck them in at night, to be with them every day.
There are over 1,000 families that need our help. Tunnels and Towers is honoring those heroes that risked their lives by providing them with mortgage-free homes.
The moment I stepped in my home, I was in awe, knowing that this was the most beautiful home I'd ever stepped into.
I love this house because it helps me and my mommy and my baby sisters and all my other family to realize that other people are there with us and supporting us.
I'm Frank Silla, chairman of the Stephen Silla Tunnel to Towers Foundation. This is our contract with our first responders and military, that when you go and serve your country or your community, and you give your kids a kiss goodbye, and you don't come home or you're catastrophically injured, we're going to give them a mortgage-free home.
It means so much to me as a law enforcement officer who was affected by a tragic incident with the loss of my husband, to know that if there is a loss in the future, the Tunnel to Towers will provide support for those families. They're not alone. I lost the father to my children. And for $11 a month, you can make families like mine more whole.
I'd like to ask you to contribute $11 a month to support their efforts. Please visit tunneltotowers.org.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
No one knows how to best cope with kidney disease like someone who lives with it every day. And that's why the National Kidney Foundation created NKS Peers, our peer mentoring program for kidney patients, including people on dialysis, transplant recipients, and those in earlier stages of kidney disease. Our program also connects living kidney donors with people who are considering donation. NKF trains kidney patients and living donors to serve as mentors in the program, and then we connect them with others who are seeking support. For someone who is just diagnosed with kidney disease or someone considering donating a kidney, talking it through with someone who's been through it is invaluable. Participants use a special toll-free phone system to connect to each other, so no one has to disclose their personal phone numbers or incur any long-distance charges, and the program is completely free. It provides effective, confidential help to those who need it. To learn more or to get involved, call 855-653-7337, that's 855-NKF-PEER, or email us at nkfpeers@kidney.org.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and GC Rock Show. Thanks for joining our informative, stimulating, thought-provoking, an entertaining show. Welcome.
Indeed, indeed. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Dave. We're covering in for doing the solo flight of the spacecraft here, and G-Ski's off. I did just send him a text. Maybe you can give us a call and, you know, chip in a little bit here and there. He did set the whole show up, and he probably sent Susie the link, and she tweeted it all. I'm usually just along for the ride, so I'm having to carry the whole basket today. But that's all right. That's all right. I got plenty of content from all kinds of different places. Probably in the last segment, we'll discuss, like I said, what I can piece together from the whole Fauci email thing. I haven't really had a chance to do any prep in that area. Just what I heard. So, you know, we'll try to do it like off the top of my head. I understood a few things today. So there's a couple things going on with that one. The bit that I wanted to get to was the rules for radicals from Saul Alinsky. And I'll guarantee you that most of the people that are practicing these rules don't realize that they're rules and that they're actually bad. I can remember showing these to a guy I worked with when I worked in the school district. There was a guy that always he manned the front desk until all the kids left, and you know we would talk here and there, but he's one of those guys. He was kind of Republican, but believed all the mainstream media. All he got his information was on Sunday morning. That's what he watched, and that's worse than sitting in a high chair with your mouth open until a spoon full of whatever goes in your mouth, and you close your mouth and you chew it and they take the spoon out and then go get another dose. That's what that equals. And he knew it. Cause I said, look, you know, you don't really, back when the Drudge Report was conservative, I would use that. I said, look, instead of spending, you know, 2.5 hours or whatever, while you're working out, while you're correcting papers, while you're doing whatever you do, while you get those shows on, maybe you should just sit down, go to a website that gathers, you know, articles like at the time it was Judge, right? Drudge. Now I use the Bongino Report and the Blaze. Those are pretty much the two that I would, you know, recommend. But I was like, just go there and just click something that interests you. I guarantee you probably won't see that on
the news. He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. I mean, it's as simple as that. Take you're for like 2 hours. You're there watching Sunday shows, the quote unquote Sunday shows, and that's where he got his information. And I tried to suggest that all you got to do, just go to the Drudge Report and just scan some of the, you know, the headlines, click on something that interests you. And I promise it's not something that they're going to say on the Sunday shows. Well, he wouldn't do it. He would just say, nope, I would rather just open my mouth and nom, 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 whatever they'd feed me. So he knew that's what he was doing. But he was, I don't know, lazy, I guess? Lazy, too lazy to do anything about it. Anyways, I gave him my book that had the rules for radicals. I said, don't read the whole book. Just read this one chapter for me, all right? And he read it, and he read the rules. And, you know, the idea of the rules is how people who are not in power can steal power from people who are in power. And he thought that was, you know, that makes sense. That's, you know, that's reasonable. That's a reasonable mindset. I'm like, okay, whatever. Give me the book back. Shut up. What are you going to do? So among Alinsky's teachings was stealth, because he had developed like a clandestine tradecraft, or at the very least, he modified it to suit his purpose. Radicalism is to be concealed. So he's, you know, they changed. No more like the long hair, maggot infested hippie nipple types were in his group. They wore suits, and they would enter establishments or systems, and they would go in at the ground level and work their way up. So if there was a union or churches or just political parties, they were to work their way up in a disciplined, methodical fashion. So Alinsky viewed revolution as like a slow and patient process. Let's see. I got a little bit here. Alinsky's, here's a bit. Let me see if I need to set it up at all. Alinsky gained his record. He would say, all right. So Alinsky's crowning achievement was his recruitment of a young high school student named Hillary Rodham. She met Alinsky through a radical church group. Hillary wrote an analysis of Alinsky's methods for her senior thesis at Wellesley College. They remained friends until Alinsky's death in 1972. Alinsky tried to hire Hillary as a community organizer, but she chose instead to attend Yale Law School. Nonetheless, Alinsky's network continued guiding Hillary's career. Fresh out of law school at age 26, Hillary received a prestigious appointment to the House Judiciary Committee's Watergate investigative team in 1974. She got the job on the recommendation of Peter and Marion Wright Edelman. Alinsky is regarded by many as the proponent of a dangerous socio-political philosophy. As such, he has been feared, just as Eugene Debs, the five-time Socialist Party candidate for the U.S. president, or Walt Whitman, or Martin Luther King has been feared, because each embraced the most radical of political faiths, democracy. So that was that is the conclusion of Hillary's senior thesis, which was done on Saul Alinsky. So I'm reading from my book, Stay Mad. I included Hillary's relationship to point out the fact that even though it is not as open as Obama, the radicalism of Alinsky is deep with her. And then I wrote in parentheses, the force is strong with this one. Let's see. George Soros used Hillary Clinton to push leftist ideas forward and to assist in infiltrating the Democrat Party. In 2004, at a Take Back America rally, Hillary introduced George Soros. Now, among the many people who have stood up and said, I cannot sit by and let this happen to the country I love, is George Soros. And I have known George Soros for a long time now. And I first came across his work in the former Soviet Union in Eastern Europe when I was privileged to travel there, both on my own and with my husband on behalf of our country. We need people like George Soros, who is fearless and willing to step up when it counts. Okay. And willing to spend billions to get it done. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Okay. So let me go back to this here. Barack Obama is also, and I'm trying to, this book came out in 2010. So that was the midterm election era of Obama's presidency, first term. So Barack Obama is also an Alinskyite. Obama spent years teaching workshops on the Alinsky method. In 1985, he began a four-year stint as a community organizer in Chicago, working for an Alinskyite group called the Developing Communities Project. Camouflage is the key to Alinsky-style organizing. While trying to build coalitions of black churches in Chicago, Obama caught flack for not attending church himself. He became an instant churchgoer. He didn't want to stand out, so he just said, oh, yep, got it. I'll be there. And he went to church ever since. So we're going to go and study the rules for radicals that were written by Saul Alinsky. Page 122 of Rules for Radicals. Oh, G-Ski just answered me back. He said, no, can't call in, still moving stuff. All right. So he writes in his book, Alinsky's book, an organizer must stir up dissatisfaction and discontent. He must create a mechanism that can drain off the underlying guilt for having accepted the previous situation for so long a time. Out of this mechanism, a new community organization arises. The job then is getting the people to move, to act, to participate. In short, to develop and harness the necessary power to effectively conflict with the prevailing patterns and change them. When those prominent in the status quo turn and label you an agitator, they are completely correct, for that is, in one word, your function. To agitate to the point of conflict. That was on page 117. Process tells us how, purpose tells us why, but in reality, it is academic to draw a line between them, for they are part of a continuum. Process is really purpose. So then he gets into the tactics. Tactics are those conscious, deliberate acts by which human beings live with each other and deal with the world around them. Here, our concern is with the tactic of taking, specifically how the have-nots, quote-unquote, can take power away from the haves. And always remember the first rule of power tactics. Number one, power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. Well, that's an interesting one. And it makes sense. And like I've been saying, is some of these are like common sense stuff. When I get into like the rules of means and ends, that is also in the book of Rules for Radicals, you really just, you look at them, you say, okay, that makes sense. The difference is the intent and the ideology driving that. So when you stop and think about power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. Well, isn't that a deception? If you only have, 300 people in your group and you make it look like there's, 300,000. Well, you're winning because people won't dare step up. Well, that's kind of the whole cancel culture. That's rule number one. All it takes is three or four people who know how to manipulate Twitter bots to make it seem like there's hundreds of thousands of people that are on board with the canceling of whatever it is. So from there, that's the first rule. It's not, power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. So number two, again, this is a common sense type of thing. Never go outside the expertise of your people. So when an action or tactic is outside the experience of the people, the result is confusion, fear, or retreat, and the collapse of communication. So you can't let that happen. Number three, whenever possible, do go outside the expertise of the enemy. Look for ways to increase insecurity, anxiety, and uncertainty. This happens all the time. Watch how many organizations under attack are blindsided by seemingly irrelevant arguments that they are then forced to address. Whenever you read those, you think about it. Whenever possible, go outside the expertise of the enemy. You look for ways to increase insecurity, anxiety, and uncertainty. And then in parentheses, Alinsky writes, this happens all the time. Watch how many organizations under attack are blindsided by seemingly irrelevant arguments that they are then forced to address. I mean, you can look around and see that happening. You can see that. You can match up exactly that happening. Whereas, somebody will complain that, in Target, you wouldn't let the transgenders go into the women's room. Well, then now they have to deal with it. So they ended up letting them in. Anyway. So here's number four. You make the enemy live up to its own book of rules. Kill them with this, for they can no more obey their own rules than the Christian church can live up to Christianity. Okay, so what are you going to do? Are you perfect? Well, I don't have to be perfect, but you're claiming to be. You're criticizing me, so you think you're better than me. I'm trying to make you live up to your own standards. It's just an agitating type of a way to interact with somebody that you disagree with. Accuse. Number five, this is my favorite. You'll know it right away. Ridicule is man's most potent weapon. It is almost impossible to counteract ridicule. It infuriates the opposition, which then reacts to your advantage. Whew. What do you think of that one? Exactly. Number six, a good tactic is one your people enjoy. That makes sense. Number seven, a tactic that drags on too long becomes a drag. So man can sustain militant interest in any issue for only a limited time. But as a side note, it seems like that limited time, it gets longer and longer and longer. Look at all the people that have been tearing apart Portland and Seattle for how many months now? they're getting that's their job now, to tear apart and disrupt and protest. That's their job now. So they must be getting paid from somebody. Number eight, keep the pressure on with different tactics and actions. Keep the pressure on with different tactics and actions and utilize all events of the period for your purpose. So whatever's going on today, if there's anything you can weave into your tactics and actions, you do it. It's sometimes kind of funny to hear how people try to do that when, you know, I can't think of an example right now, but I can remember listening to somebody try to just jam two separate things together and conflate two different things that are clearly not even close to being related. Here's another one, and this is kind of for the litigious mindset. The threat is usually more terrifying than the thing itself. Well, I don't want to get sued, you know, then I'll be in the news and everybody will know and everybody will think this and that. Why don't you just let them bring it on and let the chips fall where they may? So that's what I say. Number 10, the major premise for tactics is the development of operations that will maintain a constant pressure upon the opposition. It is this unceasing pressure that results in the reactions from the opposition that are essential for the success of the campaign. Here we go. If you push a negative hard and deep enough, it will break through into its counter side. So every positive has its negative. This is another one. You know, you can plug so many different things into this tactic. If you push a negative hard and deep enough, it will break through to its counter side. Now, I'm thinking this one through just a little bit further. And in other words, this is what has been done. Negatives have been pushed hard and deep enough so that it broke through to the other side. But now the truth is starting to come out. Hopefully it's not too late, but that's the idea behind getting a negative to break through to its counter side. Hopefully it'll then be too late to have truth matter. Number 12, the price of a successful attack is a constructive alternative. So the successful attack is done by people whom you have convinced that by their attack that they will reap a constructive alternative. Their lives will be better. Anyways, number 13, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. In conflict tactics, there are certain rules that should be regarded as universalities. One is that the opposition must be singled out as the target and frozen. And any target can always say, why do you center on me when there are others to blame as well? When you freeze your target, you disregard these rational but distracting arguments. Then as you zero in and freeze your target and carry out your attack, all the others will come out of the woodwork very soon. They become visible by their support of the target. And this is how he ends that. One acts decisively only in the conviction that all the angels are on one side and all the devils on the other. That's from the book Rules for Radicals. And there is I have a little bit on him. I'm trying to find the dedication that he put in it. the over-the-shoulder. Here it is. Here is Saul Alinsky's dedication in his own book. Tell me this guy isn't demonic. Here we go. Lest we forget at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical. From all our legends, mythology, and history, and who is to really know where mythology leaves off and history begins, or even which is which. The very first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom. Lucifer. You guys all know that one anyways. So there's the rules for radicals. We have covered that. And what we'll do is we'll take another break and we'll come back. Like I said, maybe we'll chat a little bit about the Fauci emails. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
I am Conor McGregor, multiple weight MMA champion. I'm a fighter and I've been through many battles in the octagon. Many consider my fights in the octagon heroic, but the real life heroes are those men and women who fight to protect us every day. The real life fighters, the real life heroes, are the firefighters and police officers. These first responders are true heroes, because these brave men and women put themselves in the line of danger every single day protecting us all. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation ensures that first responders from fire, EMS and police departments who are killed in the line of duty with young children have a home without the burden of a mortgage. They are my heroes. They need our help today. I'd like to ask you to join me in donating $11 a month to support their efforts. Your $11 a month honors and supports our first responders. Please call now at 1-844-BRAVEST or visit tunneltotowers.org.
I love life. I love life because there's a challenge and something new every day. I was told when I was getting married that I had this kidney disease and my three sisters had it and two of my brothers had it as well. It slows the kidneys down till they stop working. I tell myself that this can be rough and hard, but you can live and you can be happy. I go to dialysis 3 times a week. I spend 4 hours in the center. It's good to go to dialysis and see somebody care about you. I'm a social worker by profession. I like being around people. It is important to listen to your technicians and your doctors, your nephrologists and dietitians. If you don't talk to them, they don't know you're feeling bad or feeling sick. By working together, you'll feel better. I got my husband, I got my family, I got my job. I visit different places doing health and wellness like hospitals, dialysis centers, clinics, and do workshops concerning prevention for kidney failure. Dialysis affects people in different ways. Find out how it affects you so you can be able to beat it to the punch so you'll be able to be active and do things that you want to do. Be educated about what's going on with you and your body. I try to enjoy life more than what I have before. I have kidney failure, and I'm living well.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When we do Internet talk radio, we receive support from a great many areas. We have listener support, of course, and some who help with the promoting. One group that often goes unrecognized are the wives of Internet talk radio hosts. They are the ones who tolerate our dalliances and the time we invest in our hobbies. Well, this is one way we can properly recognize those who are closest to us by broadcasting their sincere sentiments regarding our passions.
Are you gonna stay up all night? You have family, you know. You're always at that computer. How much money do you make doing that dumbass radio show? You're not the only one who lives there, you know. You better come and eat. I'm not bringing it in there.
Ooh-wee. Love that one. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Dave. This is Renaissance Radio, the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show on Airwaves America. I was texting with G-Ski earlier, and I told him why I text him things. Sometimes I just text him an idea or a concept that I'm thinking about so that I don't forget it, so that we can discuss it. Maybe for content. Excuse me, for content. And, I told him, feel free to do the same thing. Oh, I got to get my notebooks going. Yeah, get your notebooks going. Or you can just text an idea to me. You don't have to have it all worked out. Because I'll text him like a phrase or something. And I'm going to say, this is something I'm working on. This is something I'm trying to noodle through. And, a couple of the things was, because I listen to talk shows, and your mind kind of like discovers things, and you say, oh wow, what about this? Like Antifa. Well, that stands for anti-fascist. Except when you look at their behavior, they should really be called profa, as in pro-fascism. So, one other thing I texted him was, I said, in fairness, or as an excuse, gain of function, the study of how to make viruses more lethal to humans, is done on viruses to then study how to kill it. So, it seems evil to try and make viruses more lethal to humans. But if you're doing that to then study how to kill it, I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air on that one. Either way, I also texted that it's easy to see how a government would find it hard to not exploit that. I mean, any government, including us. So here's another idea that I texted him, and it came out okay. When you talk about all the right left fighting going on, I said, even if one sets aside that it was Democrat Party that supported slavery, Jim Crow, segregation, etc., well, they can't have it both ways now, saying that the Republicans are standing in the way of ending racism for the last 50, 60 years. Why haven't the Democrats been able to fix it with their solutions? In other words, if Republicans had nothing to do with these proposed solutions that are being implemented, then the Democrats own whatever the outcome is. So if they're still complaining about it, they're whining about themselves, and they don't really even realize it. And then I was listening to Ben Shapiro, who was giving all kinds of statistics about race, and he had this real clever thing. He said, there is much more demand for racism in America than there is a supply. I thought that was awesome.
I thought that was an awesome phrase, and I agree with it. What do we got? Bigfoot put something up on the in the chat. I regularly call them profa when I mention them on my blog. Normally, when I link a story involving them, so I'm right on point with you there, Bigfoot. As far as that goes, exactly. They're profa. They are profa. All right. So now. Let's see if we can get into some of this Fauci stuff. I'm not sure where or how to break into this because we haven't really. We started covering a little bit last week when the origins of the virus started to come into question. And last week we were talking about, it was a conspiracy that it leaked from a lab. Oh, okay. Well, the thing is, after that, these Fauci emails got FOIA'd. And people are going through them and finding a ton of stuff. Now, here's the thing. Some of the emails are redacted. And Dan Bongino was talking about something today about this. Part of what was in the email got matched up with an interview or a statement, a presser or whatever, that Fauci was giving a year ago or whatever, talking about you don't need to worry about the virus coming from manipulated by humans. It was a natural occurrence, and that there's going to be a paper coming out saying so, like from the scientific journal or something. There'll be a paper coming out soon that reflects that opinion of it, of the virus. And within the emails, there was some back and forth with some other scientists asking them if they would sign on to this paper that's going to be coming out. And, you know, there was, I don't know who did or who didn't. I don't know what the names were redacted anyways, but they responded in the negative. It's not something that I want to sign on to as a co-author or something like that. So that indicates that they knew it was not a naturally occurring virus. By the way, that's what is the consensus now is it was not a virus from nature, from, you know, that transferred from animals to humans. It was not a virus that happened from. Now, like I said, the gain of function idea is to take a virus, a coronavirus, manipulate it so that it would be lethal and more lethal to humans, and then work up, ways to kill it and control it. The United States had a moratorium on that kind of research. I don't remember where maybe I said this last week. They had a moratorium on that kind of research, and it was only issued an exemption by Dr. Fauci or his boss, which are the top two infectious disease guys that would have even had the ability to issue a waiver for money that ended up in Wuhan at the infectious disease lab, the Institute of Virology. That's what it is, in Wuhan. So I'm trying to do this off the top of my head. So there was a lot that was going on in the emails, and there's still stuff in there that people haven't really put together, but Dan Bongino put together a couple of those emails with you know, and juxtapose them with some like audio clips of Fauci. And that's pretty awesome. I wouldn't have had time to do that. So the government, it seems, was sending our taxpayer dollars to the Institute of Virology in Wuhan, China. So how is that not exploiting to some degree the idea of manipulating viruses or weaponizing viruses, one or the other? That's funding it. That's us paying for it. So in what might be the biggest blunder, the biggest bad decision, the biggest, worst decision was that we were sending money to help fund the research on a virus that accidentally escaped or whatever, accidentally on purpose, escaped and ended up exacerbating conditions that a great many people had in order to, well, that resulted in their deaths. So I don't know how many, I mean, the death count from COVID is still under review to me. It's astronomical, but they're not all. There was a lot attributed to it, you know. So it's almost like you can get a glimpse of the whole next level game that's going on. That, you know, we're here, we're going to work. Okay, yeah. Those guys down there, they're going to work. They're not watching what we're doing. If we do this, this, and this, we can call it that, that, and that, and then we'll have that, that, and that, and then we'll be able to do this, this, and this. And like I said, it's just kind of a glimpse into the next level games, because does somebody want to reduce the population of the world? Yes. Is somebody in a position to campaign for that? Yes. Are there people that want one world government? Yes. Does China want to be in charge of that government? Yes. You know, so you can kind of get a look. Like I said, it's a whole next level thing that you can get a glimpse of. So one of the other interesting things was in some of those emails, like I said, some of the names were redacted regarding asking people if they would sign on to this paper saying that the virus came about normally. The virus, the word I'm looking for, mutated into human form normally. Instead of being manipulated, it happened in nature, and they're talking about genomes and stuff like that. I'm like, what the hell do I know of that? I don't do that for a living. So they, like I said, some of that stuff was redacted. Now, the redaction code indicates, and this was, again, this is according to Dan Bongino in his research. The redaction code was, this is redacted because it might interfere with an ongoing or with a current federal investigation. So that's why they redacted it. Hold on. Whom is being investigated and for what? Some of the redactions were redacted under the code. He gave this like a letter and two numbers or something. Let's call it B-52. The Love Shack is a little old place where... Anyway, the redaction code was that of something that might interfere with a current federal investigation. So the question is Tony Fauci under investigation for anything? Is Tony Fauci's boss, I don't even know the guy's name, is he under investigation for anything? Good questions. I guess you're not allowed to ask, though. I don't know. I don't know the answers to it. But there's a couple of breadcrumbs that kind of lead you in that direction, right? I don't know what else to do about that. So Fauci was on the air talking about don't worry about the virus. It was a natural mutation. It had nothing to do with any human manipulation. Matter of fact, there's going to be a paper coming out that reflects that. Keep an eye out for that in a scientific journal. But on the emails, they're scrambling to get people to sign on as co-authors, which some people did not. I guess the paper came out, so they got a few. But yeah, so that's what's going on with that. But what we don't know right now is Fauci under investigation? He damn well should be. And I got to tell you too, you know, while I was listening to today, I could not help but think months and months and months ago, my wife said she thought this was a bioweapon that was developed and either got deployed on purpose or by accident. And it was created to be a bioweapon. It's kind of looking that way right now. I mean, we don't have all the information, but kind of looking that way. Anybody got any other input? Give us a call, 516-387-1705. I got about almost a little over 10 minutes left, and if anybody wants to call in and chat it up, see if I can get Susie to push her button and push Susie's button to push the one button and we'll bring her on. Anybody else want to call in? Anybody else listening? By the way, we're on page 4 this week. We're on page 3 last week. But as I was looking today, it was on page 4. So looking ahead, what have I got looking ahead? I have got a couple of things. We've talked about the 17th Amendment and how I think that would reduce the quote unquote the money in politics aspect that people argue about. There's too much money in politics. So I think the repealing of the 17th Amendment would do that. So that's what's up with that. All right, looks like I do have somebody here. Let's see. And do we have Sue?
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
Hi, Dave. It's a great, great show.
I told you it was going to be a great show.
Yeah, no, it was. I really enjoyed it. You know, the one thing that I really want to say is with these COVID vaccines, I'm just becoming more and more disturbed with, you know, what I'm hearing. But the main thing and the biggest push, the Democratic states from the governors to Biden right now for vaccines is children as young as 6 through 17 to get vaccinated. And I know here in Colorado, they now have a lottery going. If you're 6 to 17, you got vaccinated, you can enter the lottery. And they're going to pick 25, you know, young people, and they're going to get $50,000. Now, the latest information that's come out with these vaccines, and especially in the young, and this has to do, they're seeing it more in males than females, is myocarditis. which is a very, very serious condition. They really didn't see it that much in the older people, but this is one thing that's showing up in the young. And so, you know, anybody who listens to this, do not, I repeat, do not children get vaccinated with any of the vaccines. It is very dangerous, and you're putting your kids at risk. And considering they've already proven that students and the young do not really transmit the virus, and if they do get it, they don't get that sick. It's not like, you know, my age group, the elderly. So I just wanted to give that tidbit of information.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There does seem to be a push to get kids done, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's the teachers union that's pushing that. So well, the only way we're going to let the teachers go back to full time teaching is if the kids wear the star belly sneeches with their stars for vaccination.
Yeah, but you know, it's so incredibly dangerous. I think it's more dangerous for the young than it is the other age groups. There's a well-known anchor woman from the UK who died, I think it was 3 days after taking the Johnson & Johnson. She had a brain hemorrhage. So to me, you know, the regular flu vaccine, you got sick or, you know, but none of this stuff that's showing up now. And when they're coming up with vaccines against a man-manipulated, you know, virus,
yeah,
you know, and the thing is, you've got all of their hands are in each other's pockets, and these drug companies are making buku money right now. And so they're wanting to push it too.
That's true. That's definitely true. You know, I was talking with a guy, jiu-jitsu teacher at the school I teach at. He's in the jiu-jitsu program. Just, we were chatting about this, you know, virus, vaccines and stuff like that. And, you know, it kind of makes sense that, some people really had an adverse reaction to the vaccine, and some people didn't at all. And you know, we kind of relate it to, well, the people that had the violent reaction to the vaccine probably would have been affected the deepest if they had gotten the virus, and vice versa, the people that just kind of like shrugged it off would have shrugged the virus off. You know, just kind of
right.
Kind of putting it together.
Well,
that
you
way.
Know, you know what really ticks me off about this vaccine, and I took it because I'm in, you know, the age group, and with my medical conditions, you know, I get it. I'm dead.
Yeah.
Period. But what got me was they told us when we took it, it would prevent us from getting COVID. Then I go to my doctor, and he said, no, that's not true. You can just as easily get COVID today as before you were vaccinated, but they're hoping that it, you know, built up some antibodies in you so that it won't kill you. And I had a violent reaction to it, you know, and it's been lies from the very beginning.
For all, in all directions. That's kind of what I was saying, you know, just a couple of moments ago about, you get a glimpse into this next level stuff, you know, where, you know, there's people that want to reduce the world's population. Well, how can we do that? You know, are we in a position to implement this?
Have you seen the tape? Somebody found it was, I don't know how many years ago, but Zuckerberg was talking about reducing the world's population through a vaccine. He's on tape talking about this.
A vaccine or a virus?
Vaccine.
Wow. Well,
yeah, you know.
We'll see,
won't we? Yep. Yeah, we'll see, because I don't think we've seen the end of what all this, you know, vaccine can actually is going to do to people, and the long-term effects, too. You know, I think there's going to be long-term effects on people.
But you're not going to be able to approve it one way or the other, right?
No, but let me tell you, if your son gets myocarditis right after he got the vaccine, and they're proving, you know, young people just don't come up with myocarditis. You know,
right.
It's very, very rare. And they're seeing a lot of it. So if your son comes up with myocarditis, and by the way, you know, for people who don't know, that's an inflammation of the heart, that it can damage other things such as valves and, you know, valves in the heart and all kinds of things. And this will be pretty much proven to come from, you know, like the vaccine. And
direct,
you know, when
result,
you hear Zuckerberg, yeah, when you hear him talk, control the population, of course, there's a lot of conspiracy theories and everything out there. But, you know, the more they push not only this vaccine but other vaccines, it just makes you wonder what exactly is in them. And, you know, down the road, what is it going to do to the world's population?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, from fertility or, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that these people are evil, and you've got people like Fauci, you know, who's a really brilliant man. You know, it just blows the mind. And then you look at, you know, go back to how Planned Parenthood was founded, and it was on her idea of, you know,
right,
decreasing the black race, right?
Yep. Yep,
and
absolutely,
that was a long time ago. So kind of apply that to the vaccines and what they're trying to do now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, you, and I thank you very, very much for calling and bringing it in. I'm down to like 30 seconds on the show, so... just gonna have to wrap it up. But like I said, I love how you call me up and bail me out here at the end of my show. I really, really appreciate it. So, anyways, I want to thank you for calling in. I want to thank everybody else for listening. Thanks, Bigfoot, for chiming in the chat. And we'll see you probably not next week, but we'll get to it as soon as we can. Later.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rocks.